A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well, and I hope it isn't too weird and confusing having the Arsecast on a different day. You see, this week we're releasing the Arsecast on a Thursday as opposed to a Friday, so anyone sitting there going, oh look, the Arsecast has just popped up in my iTunes or my Pocket Casts or wherever it is that you listen to the Arsecast, and you're thinking, oh, it's Friday already? Fantastic! I hardly noticed this week going by. I've got bad news. Bad news. It's Thursday today when this Arsecast is released. You could be listening to it any time, of course, but it is Thursday today. The reason that we're releasing the Arsecast today is because this weekend, myself and James from Gunnarblog are going to be in New York recording a live Arsecast Extra. We're going to be doing that on Sunday in a bar called The Barleycorn in Park Place, New York. So if you're in the area, feel free to come along. I'll give you some more details a bit later on, but Thursday today I'm going to be traveling, and then when you get there, you know, you've got the whole jet lag thing and the whole, well, how do I cope with jet lag? There's only one real way to do that as far as I'm aware. Certainly when you travel from this side of the Atlantic to that side, is you stay awake as long as you can to get yourself sort of in the clock of America, and you drink beer, because beer has been scientifically proven. This isn't just me theorizing. It has been scientifically proven by actual scientists to combat the effects of jet lag. So you drink some beer and you stay awake, and then eventually you go, oh, look, it's only 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the evening. But of course, it's 2 o'clock in the morning because you've been, you know, traveling from this side and then you go asleep. And then hopefully when you wake up, you're sort of on the right clock. You're on the right time. So what I didn't want to do was to do anything that would mess up that very, very exact scientific process in any way, like having to record or finish off a podcast in some way. So I said, look, the best thing for me to do would just be to get the podcast out a day early, and that's one less thing to worry about. But it's going to be great. New York City. Wow, what a place. It really is a fantastic place. And I'm kind of hoping to meet my heroes over there. You never know. I mean, I could run into them. It's not impossible, is it? It's the city where anything can happen. That's right. Who doesn't go to New York and hope that they run into Cagney and Lacey? Yeah. Maybe that's just me. Probably is. But it should be good fun. I'll give you some more details of the podcast happening in the Barleycorn in New York a little bit later on. Also, I'm going to be talking to Philippe Auclair in this week's episode. We're going to be talking about the state of the squad. Is there something weird and strange going on with Olivier Giroud? We'll examine that, and we'll look ahead to the game against Chelsea this weekend. We're also going to be playing FanDuel, one-day fantasy football in which you can win actual real life money. I can't, but you can. I only can't because I'm terrible at fantasy football. I'll give you details of that and how you can sign up and get refunded even if you don't win. And the chance to win like hundreds and hundreds of pounds by playing FanDuel. That's a little bit later on. So, since the last Arsecast, what has happened? Well, we've gone away from home. I wonder if we ever done this before. Statisticians, Arsenal stats heads, and those who know everything about every result and every fixture that we've ever played. Has this ever happened before? Two games away from home. both times the team has scored four goals away from home, but with two completely different starting 11s. I would be very surprised if that's happened before. We've set a new, a new record. It's not a record, is it? It's just a thing that we did. But I don't think we've ever done that thing before. I could be wrong. But my suspicion is that in the many, many years of Arsenal's existence, this is the first time that that's ever happened. Scoring four goals in consecutive away games with two completely different starting 11s. So if I'm wrong, or if I'm off the beaten track here, please tell me. But those of you who are into that kind of thing, who know all the records and the results, maybe you could confirm that. That's a thing, isn't it? We've done a thing. We've all been alive to witness this thing that's never been done before in the history of Arsenal Football Club. So the first four goals are scored at Hull, away to Hull in the Premier League, a 4-1 win. Our third successive Premier League win. But we talked about that game in some detail on the Arscast Extra on Monday. So we don't need to go over that hugely. But then away from home against Nottingham Forest. First time the teams have met since 1999, which is amazing when you consider just how long it was that Arsenal-Nottingham Forest was a top-flight fixture. And, there you go. Just shows you how things can change in football. So Nottingham Forest, and we went there in the EFL Cup, the cup with no sponsor this season. And actually, somebody pointed out to me that the Premier League doesn't have a sponsor this season. It was the Barclays Premier League, and now there's no Barclays. Just doesn't have a sponsor. It's the Premier League. Premier League. They're so rich. They're sponsoring themselves. Anyway, we went to Nottingham Forest and won 4-0. And Granit Xhaka did it was almost an exact replica of his opening Arsenal goal, the one that made it 4-1 away from Hull. And he did it again against Forest. He opened the scoring. This time it wasn't quite as clean. It sort of deflected off a defender's back, skidded off the defender's back rather than deflected in any significant way that would confuse the goalkeeper. But the goalkeeper did that annoying thing, didn't he, of getting a hand to it, not being able to keep it out. Now, actually, I prefer if the goalkeeper gets a hand to it to not keep it out, but it just takes something away from the cleanliness of the goal, the cleanliness of the strike. Nevertheless, what a left foot that guy has. What a left foot. And may he keep shooting like that forever and ever and ever. Now, I know they're not all going to go in, but goddamn, it's good, isn't it, to see somebody just have a go. Have a go. It's opened up for you. There's nobody in front of you. The ball's there. You're a professional footballer paid hundreds of thousands of pounds every single month to play football. You should be able to kick it in the reasonable direction of the goal more often than not. Instead, footballers fucking shank them out here, there, and everywhere. So when you've got a guy who can do what he did, just keep doing it. Because it does, whether you like it or not, add some variety to our attacking play. And look, I understand conceptually why you would pass the ball around. I understand the concept of expected goals and how it's more likely that you're going to score if you're one-on-one with the goalkeeper, blah, 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 blah. But look, that takes away just some of the spontaneity and genius of football. That's what makes it so great. Seeing a guy smash one in from 30, 35 yards is one of the greatest sights in football. Everyone loves it. You can't not love that. It's just fantastic. So I would like Granit Xhaka to keep doing it. Whether or not Granit Xhaka will play this weekend against Chelsea, I'm not quite sure. We'll have a little bit of discussion about that. But also, great for Lucas Perez to get off the mark. I think when Arsene Wenger put him into the team for the Forest game, because there was no Olivier Giroud with his toe injury, he would have wanted something like this from a 27-year-old. If you buy a 20-year-old striker, 21-year-old, you bring him in, you think, well, look, he still has time, he's still learning the game. But a guy who's 27, nearly 28, you want him to kind of hit the ground running a little bit. You don't want it to be a case that he's got 8 or 10 appearances and he still hasn't scored. So that was really good, really positive. He got off the mark with a good penalty. And then his second goal, look, the defender wasn't brilliant, but that kind of aggression and pace and power up front is fantastic. It's not the kind of goal necessarily that Olivier Giroud could have scored, because he doesn't really have the pace to trouble the defender in the way that Lucas did. He has the strength sometimes. When he feels like it, he can put himself about. But just that ability to trouble defenders with pace and a bit of power and some persistence as well. It was a persistently annoying goal for Nottingham Forest, I would say. So great to see him get off the mark. And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who has had a difficult time. There's no question he's had a really tough time this season. His performances have been underwhelming, you would say. A lot of his decision-making hasn't been particularly great. And even against Nottingham Forest in the first half, he was a bit like, oh, I don't know if this is going very well for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Came to life a bit more in the second half. Certainly in the last 20 minutes, he was really much better. Created some chances. One for Lucas, which I think he should have done better with. And then he combined with the Spaniard very well to score the goal that made it 4-0. And hopefully that will do his confidence some good. So all in all, a very positive night. When you add in the fact that Rob Holding played very well, Ainsley Maitland-Niles didn't look out of place at right back, Chuba Akpom, ostensibly a striker, but being asked to play out on the left-hand side, he was good, effective, won a penalty. You know, there were promising signs there. And when Arsene Wenger talks about pairings, when he talks about midfield duos, the fact that Xhaka scored a brilliant goal will catch the headlines. What I liked most was the fact that he combined extremely well with Mohamed Elneny, and they look like a duo that could work very well together. But look, to talk a little bit more about the stuff that's gone on this week, to look ahead, of course, to Chelsea, to chat about Olivier Giroud, I'm delighted to welcome to the Arscast for the very first time this season, Philippe Auclair. Hello there.
Good morning to you, Andrew.
Right, let's start with Nottingham Forest in midweek in the EFL Cup. I'm not sure exactly how much you saw of it, but in general terms, the ability to change your team so comprehensively. Arsene Wenger made 11 changes from the team that beat Hull 4-1 to then go away. I know it's the League Cup and blah, 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 but still, the 11 that he put out scored four goals away from home again, played very, very well. And I think there was a lot to be encouraged about from the performance and the result.
Yeah, because, you know, in front of them, Philippe Montagnier hadn't made so many changes, as a matter of fact, himself. Mm. I think he only changed three players from his own team. And also, I was wondering if it was a first that we had an Arsenal starting 11, and I doff my cap to the Arsenal gentleman here, where we had three double-barreled named players.
True.
Which I think only for this reason it's an occasion which needs to be remembered. So, including a Frenchman whom I've never seen play before.
The Jeff.
The Jeff, Ren Adelaide, well, what a name.
Yes.
Geoffrey Quinn Adelaide. I mean, that's magnificent. No, it's true. It was a job very, very well done and very good management, as a matter of fact, of what will be a fairly tasty encounter against Chelsea. And when you compare it with what Chelsea had to go through at Leicester, which was not easy, to say the least, it's quite obvious that it's a small advantage, without a doubt, for the Arsenal before the derby.
So, I mean, when we look at the game and we look at the way that Arsene Wenger selected his team, obviously this is a competition in which he's blooded youth, and he did a bit of that. We saw Ainsley Maitland-Niles at right back. We spoke about the Jeff. Rob Holding was in there. Chuba Akpom got a run out. But he was able to field a midfield duo, Granit Xhaka and Mohamed Elneny, who cost the guts of £50 million. He's got a £17 million striker up top. He's got players like Gabriel, Kieran Gibbs, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in there also. So it feels, perhaps this season more than any other, that the mix between the young talent and the experienced players are actually playing for a way to get into the first team, rather than just going, oh, well, this is the only chance I'm going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was interested to see Xhaka and Elneny playing together, because I was wondering if that was not a real solution, by the way.
Yeah. They were good. They were good.
Yes, indeed. And Elneny, after just a few games, looked good last season, I have to say. I always liked him. And as to Xhaka, I think it's only a question of days before he starts a game for Arsenal. particularly, I think, against a team like Chelsea, where you're going to have perhaps a little bit more physical bite.
Mm-hmm.
It would make a great deal of sense to have him in that starting 11. So, yes, I must say, on paper, it looks all right. And perhaps the this cobwebs of melancholy that we had at the beginning of the season are starting to be swept away ever so daintily.
Mm.
I'm not sure that everything is hunky-dory yet. I think there's still a question as to what is happening up front. But for the rest, could be worse, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could. I mean, how do you view the squad? Because obviously the transfer window's over and done. Arsenal spent the guts of £100 million in the summer transfer window. A couple of the signings were late. Obviously, Skodran and Mustafi came in late, and Lucas Perez came in late. But you know, added to Rob Holding, added to Granit Xhaka. What's your view of the squad? I mean, I know it's very early and we don't quite know, and I don't think Arsene Wenger quite knows yet how exactly he's going to put all the pieces of this particular puzzle together. But in terms of how rounded it looks and what sort of depth there is and what kind of quality there is...
Especially when Ramsey will come back.
Of course, yeah.
But, very, very soon.
Yeah. So
yes, there is... It looks okay, to say the least. I was very, very pleased with the arrival of Mustafi myself. Because, you know, when Pear is back, which, of course, is going to be in a while, but you'll have, you know, four very decent centre-backs. And Rob Holding, actually, what I saw of him, I quite liked.
Mm.
He looked quite composed. You know, he had his moments where it was a bit more difficult, but that's to be expected. It's coming from Bolton. It's quite a different culture. The midfield, as we know, is absolutely packed with possibilities. Now, the question is to find a balance in that, and that's what's been missing so far. I'm a little bit more concerned about the situation of Olivier Giroud, for example.
Mm.
Because I'm still not entirely convinced, despite, you know, his quite barnstorming performance last week, that Alexis is really at his best and best employed in this centre forward position. And as to Lucas Perez, I don't think it's the two goals against Nottingham Forest which can, you know, possibly tell us, well, yeah, he's got it, and you know, that's going to be. So that's the only question mark that I've got really about the team at the moment.
Okay, let's go through, because I have these notes written down here, and you've kind of covered three of them there in one sentence.
Really?
Yeah, so I just want to go back a little bit, because people, we spoke about Granit Xhaka, and people have been wondering why it is that Arsene Wenger hasn't been playing Granit Xhaka. It feels, obviously, when you sign a player, that you're signing him for 4 or 5 years, and you can't make any real judgments in 4 or 5 weeks of the season. But it feels, obviously, like he's easing him into action. But he spoke about Coquelin and Cazorla, and he spoke about pairs that work together.
Yep.
Does it feel perhaps to you that maybe he's waiting for the perfect partner for Xhaka? Maybe he's got his eye on Xhaka and Ramsey playing together, and he sees Coquelin and Cazorla.
Yes, that would be actually a very interesting one. Very dynamic.
Yeah.
And with Ramsey being more of a, you know, box-to-box and one of those midfielders who surge in the penalty area, which is something which is a bit missing when he's not around.
Mm.
Xhaka and Elneny is also a pairing which is possible if you want a more defensive-minded team. But remember that this Coquelin-Cazorla partnership, he found more or less by chance to start with. It was because of injuries that suddenly these two were put together, and oh, it works.
Yeah.
It works. Coquelin Xhaka, I don't think so, because unless you want to beat the club record in terms of yellow and red cards over a season. the partnerships are yet to be established. But more importantly, I think the partnerships for me would be up front, because we've seen... that's a memory that is not really good, which is the Oxlade-Chamberlain-Walcott-Perez trio. That didn't work at all.
Mm.
And I genuinely do think that we need somebody who can hold the ball up front, please.
Okay, well, Alexis for you is... is not that guy.
He's not that guy. It's not, and I don't think that's where he can hurt people the most.
Do you feel like he should play?
If we're playing Chelsea, it will depend, because it might be a very different Chelsea with Marco Alonso on the left and Azpilicueta on the right. But if Branislav Ivanovic is on the team sheet, I would love to see Alexis on the left. Personally, I would love to.
Do you feel like that's where he's best, or where he would be best suited to this Arsenal team? I mean, do you feel like when Arsene Wenger is picking Alexis Sanchez up front, he's doing it because he has a specific plan in terms of how he wants his team to play, or he just feels like, okay, Giroud is sidelined a bit at the moment, and we'll discuss him in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Lucas Perez is a bit new. I'm not going to play Theo Walcott there, so Alexis is kind of all I've got. But or is it a case that he's trying to do something very specific, and we're not sure exactly what it is yet?
Well, precisely, I'm not sure what it is exactly yet, because yes, he will score, and he has scored in this position, as he will score from any position. When Alexis was first used as a number nine, it was very much as an emergency measure, as you will remember. And I would imagine that the reason he's playing there at the moment is because something is not quite right with Olivier Giroud. That's the only thing I can think of. What is not quite right is, I must confess, a little bit of a mystery to me. And I don't think that there is a plan to convert Alexis Sanchez into a centre-forward like, let's say, Thierry Henry was converted into a centre-forward. I don't think there's any plan like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the moment it's more a question of making do with some players who perhaps, I mean, Giroud, obviously there was an issue with the fitness when he came back. He'd been, working very hard at the Euro, and he needed a break and so forth. And obviously there might have been other things, I don't know. But it's a bit of a mystery to me. I don't know if you've got great theories about that, Andrew.
I don't know, but I mean, I agree with you. I don't think we quite know exactly what's going on with Giroud, because you talk about him being away at the Euros, and obviously he was, and he worked hard, and he put in the big shift for France, and it must have been terribly disappointing for him to have experienced the final the way he did. But Laurent Koscielny's back in the team from the second game of the season. I know there was an element of necessity to that.
Yes.
Mesut Ozil is back in the team. Pretty much everybody is back in the team. And you looked at the PSG game, for example, as one which would probably have suited Giroud to start,
yeah.
Given the occasion, given the location, also given the fact that he's a big centre forward who would have helped Arsenal, I think, on the night if he'd been playing in that position and playing as well as he can. But he came off the bench, he was frustrated. I think there was an element of bad luck to his sending off. But then all of a sudden after that, there's a toe injury. And I'm not sure if that's a toe injury or a toe injury, it definitely feels like there's something going on with Giroud that we're not aware of. And it's a bit difficult to work out exactly what it is, because he's obviously a player that Arsene Wenger likes a great deal and has put a great deal of faith in and has defended hugely. But what's the phrase? By his actions you shall judge him. And I think if we're looking at the way that Arsene Wenger is treating Olivier Giroud, or using or not using Olivier Giroud, it's difficult to escape the conclusion that there's something going on.
Yes, and because, toe injury, yes, I can understand, but and they can be really nasty and pleasant. I've had one, I couldn't, play or run for about a year. So, but we're not talking about a fracture here.
Yeah.
Talking about bruising or, I don't know, a little cut or an ingrown toenail. I don't
Maybe.
Know. but it's obviously a very sensitive toe. it puzzles me. And the other thing as well is that you play very differently when you have Giroud and when you don't have Giroud. And to accommodate, if you say, okay, well, Lucas Perez has come in, has shown very good things against Nottingham Forest. It was only Nottingham Forest, but still he did the job. Scored a double, so he must feel confident. We bought him because we thought he was a good centre-forward, but he's a completely different type of player, and which means, in a way, rejigging the way that Arsenal can use width, for example.
Yeah.
when you've got Giroud, you know what to expect. At least you've got a target man. You've also got somebody who is very good at playing in first intention, as we say in French, who uses a lot of deviations and flicks to put players into good positions, and also who's got a fairly, whatever people say, fairly phenomenal conversion rate in terms of chances created and goals scored, which is something that people tend to forget, because when he misses one, everybody remembers it. So it's not just a question of, oh, should I use this player or should I use that player? No, if you compare, for example, Chelsea, and they've got Batshuayi or Diego Costa, are you going to change radically the way you're playing because one or the other? I don't think so. But if you've got Giroud or if you've got Lucas Perez, these are two completely, utterly different types of player. So there has a choice to be made by the manager, because Arsenal is not the kind of team that can result from one style of play to another style of play very easily, very quickly.
Yeah.
From game to game, you've got they tend to play one way, and generally they play the same way throughout the whole season, unless suddenly it's a bit more defensive, perhaps like it was two years ago. But and you need to think about that and what kind of team you want in the end. I mean, is it that Wenger himself doesn't quite know what sort of team he has at his disposal? Because of the fact players came back, you know, late, having had long holidays after the Euro. I mean, we're talking about Giroud. We could talk about Mesut Özil as well, who hasn't quite fired up yet.
Sure.
So, yeah, work in progress. But the satisfaction is that after a pretty dreary opening, at least the results are coming.
Yeah.
And they are satisfactory.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And maybe, look, it's a way, I think, as you said with Olivier Giroud, everybody knows how Arsenal will play when Olivier Giroud is in the team. They know, yes. Not necessarily they can't always combat it, but it's quite easy to think or to counter Arsenal if you know Olivier Giroud is going to be in the team, because this is the way the team is going to play, this is the way they're going to attack, wall passes, etc., etc. But obviously with Alexis up front, the way that he moves out of position, I suppose, creates space for wide players to move in there, which Wenger talked about with Theo Walcott on the right, and maybe Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Alex Iwobi as well on the left-hand side. Lucas Perez, I think we saw a little bit of what he can do. He can actually play off the shoulder of the last defender, but he's got the strength and perhaps the physicality as well to cause them similar-ish kind of problems to the way that Giroud does, but obviously he does it with quite a bit more pace. So I do wonder if there's either a plan or he's just trying not to make the team as predictable as it has been.
Maybe there's a bit of both.
Yeah.
There obviously is a plan, or rather the plan is being put together in the training sessions. I don't think it's a long-term plan, in as much Lucas Perez was, I wouldn't say an afterthought. I'm not saying that the club was not looking at it, but they were looking at other players before they were looking at Lucas Perez. And so it was not, we need to get that player because this is the way we want the team to progress. This is the way we want our game to evolve. No, I mean, a centre forward was desperately needed, who was available on hardly anybody. Oh, there's Lucas Perez. We quite like him. We'll have him. I simplify, and I don't want to sound scornful.
Sure.
With us to Arsenal scouts, but there is an element that things are still in suspension, to use a simile from chemistry, and we're waiting for the precipitate.
Yeah.
And the precipitate, to me, it's still not quite clear exactly what is going to happen. Because you talk about Giroud and the way that the game changes when he's or he's not there. It's the way you use your wide players when Giroud is here, which is completely different. When you have fullbacks like Bellerin and to a lesser extent Nacho Monreal, but who are very decent crossers of the ball, or Theo Walcott was very, very quick on one flank as well, and they know they've got Giroud. This is going to be a completely different type of game from the one if you've got Lucas Perez.
Yeah, yeah.
At the moment, we can't judge by what happened against Nottingham Forest, But I, you know, you still get the feeling that Arsène is trying to define a team that will still look like an Arsène team, very familiar. Basically, we have questions at the moment.
Do you think that we will get some answers, perhaps, in the team that he selects for this weekend's game against Chelsea? Because obviously he's had a few weeks now to look at various things. He's been perhaps a bit cautious with some of his team selections. He admitted to that when we lost the opening game of the season. He said you have a tendency to go with what you know has worked, and that's where Coquelin and Cazorla came in for a number of games, because he knows them and he knows what to expect and he knows how they're going to play. So perhaps it makes it easier to deal with some of the other indecipherables. You might say. But this weekend, obviously, against Chelsea, it's a big test for Arsenal, and it's a big test, obviously, it's a home game against big opposition, having lost on the opening day against Liverpool. The record against Chelsea has not been particularly great down the years. No, this is a game on which there is an amount of pressure on Arsenal to perform, particularly at home. So having viewed what he's viewed over the last number of games and seen the way that his team has performed against PSG, against Watford, against Leicester, etc., etc., there should be some clues, or he should have a better idea of what he wants to do with the players he has at his disposal. And maybe we'll see that when Chelsea come to visit on Saturday.
Yes, I would also like to think that he will choose mobility over power up front against Chelsea.
So who's that then? Is that Lucas Perez rather than Alexis Sanchez?
Yes, perhaps. Or Alexis on the left, Perez in the middle. I mean, you want to exploit. I mean, I don't know if you saw the David Luiz's performance against Leicester last night.
I didn't. No, no.
It was very, very funny, and it seemed every time there was a kind of a race between Luiz and the centre forward, and well, heaven knows the Leicester centre forwards are incredibly quick, but. There was a bit of a problem, shall we say, for Chelsea every time, every single time. So you want to use that. And Cahill doesn't look in the form of his life either, and he's not the most mobile of players either. So you would think, you know, mobility around the boxes might be good. Yeah. Matic doesn't look great either. So, I mean, you would think that if you try to batter Chelsea, that's not going to work. But if you try to be a bit cuter and a bit quicker, I think quickness, tempo, will be the essence. So you can imagine, but you know, we're thinking horses for courses here, or I am thinking horses for courses, which is not really a Wenger trait. He will probably base more his team around what he saw, not necessarily last night on Tuesday night, but what he will have seen on the training ground and the physical state of his players, rather than thinking, okay, this is Chelsea, this is what we should be doing against those guys, which is different from what we've been doing against those guys, because he tends to stick to the same 11 basically all the time.
Yeah.
And so I would like to think that would be the case, and that little by little, as has been the case in previous seasons, by the way, the final puzzle falls into place by itself.
Yeah, I mean, Antonio Conte is a manager who is renowned for his tactical setup, the way that he sets up his teams to play against the opposition. Is there perhaps a little bit of an advantage for Arsenal, the uncertainty regarding the Arsenal team? He's not looking at it going, well, we know he's going to play Giroud up front. We know he's going to do this. We know he's going to do that. He can't maybe figure out exactly how Arsenal are going to set up. I mean, would that enter Arsene Wenger's thinking? And is this really, you know, despite the fact Chelsea are obviously a very good side and the results have been pretty good so far this season, it feels like a really good chance to beat Chelsea this time.
Yes, I mean, I've seen a lot of them this season. And I was convinced in fits and bursts and unconvinced most of the time. Mm. I think they played something like three decent halves so far in all competitions, which is not an awful lot. And they've shown some lack of imagination. And there are also problems around what is Conte's best team. And You can sense that there will be big changes in this Chelsea team, but not yet.
Yeah.
Because of injuries, you know, the fact that Terry was not available, Zuma is obviously a long-term absentee, all these things, that David Luiz arriving, which obviously throws the furry cat among the pigeons, when you have to organize your defense. So we have two teams which have yet to find a shape that is completely recognizable and identifiable. And I don't think the Chelsea we're seeing at the beginning of the season is the one we'll see in 1 month, 2 months' time. So this is a good time, I think, to take them. They have frailties. They have a number of frailties. And they were exposed again in the League Cup. They've been exposed in the league. And if you look more closely at their results in the league, you will see that most of them, when they won, was either somewhat against the run of play or very, very late in the game in circumstances in which, yeah, actually luck played a part.
Yeah.
Even against West Ham, who are not doing particularly well this season, they were very lucky to take 3 points. So there are frailties to be exploited. They were better in the League Cup at Leicester, without a doubt, but with a much changed personnel, and particularly the fact that Fabregas was playing, which should be interesting if he's the Emirates. Oh, yes. My God. so, yeah, I mean, it's probably as good a chance as Arsenal has had for a while. I remember the last visit, I think we all remember, pretty dire occasion.
Yeah.
And I remember how nervous I was before the game, and I didn't fancy that at all. And I thought, something's going to happen. And it did happen. This time, I think there's more scope for the Gunners on this occasion. But what the team will look like, to be honest, I'm more uncertain of than I've been for a very long time, which is not a very Arsenal thing to say.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. As you said, it might play a little bit with Conte's preparation for the game. It shows, of course, that the team hasn't quite settled, hasn't quite gelled. But it also means that there are options. And that there are options to change the game as well as it goes along, even if it's not Wenger's strongest point.
Mm.
I'm like you. I don't know what the team sheet would look like. I mean, if you put Xhaka, you don't put Xhaka, it's already a big difference. You take Coquelin out and put Xhaka with Cazorla?
Worked against Watford.
Yes. Do you think Elneny is security? You know, he's also is a very disciplined, very dutiful player. He's got good sense of positioning, and that's important against if by chance Fabregas, for example, is playing, you need somebody to close quickly.
Yeah.
Wow, all these questions, but it's not the usual thing with Arsenal. The one positive I would say that you feel that there is it's an upwards curve at the moment, most definitely. Well, to be honest, judging by the way it started, it could be nothing but an upwards curve.
Well, look, let's hope it continues on that trajectory. I think a win against Chelsea would go a long way to not just convincing people who have doubts after that opening game, but certainly the players themselves, because it feels a bit like there's a psychological impact on these big games. And if we can put one to bed at home nicely against opposition like Chelsea at the start of the season, it'll do us a lot of good. But look, we better leave it there. Thank you, as ever, Philippe Auclair.
Thank you, Andrew.
Fantastic stuff as ever from Philippe. Thank you very much indeed to him. And if you're not following him, you definitely should. I mean, on Twitter, of course. I don't mean that if you see him on the street, you should just follow him. That would be weird and quite disconcerting for him when he noticed you. Unless you're really good at staying out of sight like an undercover cop. Just do it on Twitter. It's at Philippe Auclair. At Philippe Auclair.
Right now, I'm playing here. Bingo, 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 bingo. Just to get minutes. Just to get minutes. Bingo, bingo. Just to get minutes. Just to get minutes. Play anywhere where the boss wants me to play. Just to get minutes. Bingo, bingo, bingo. Just to get minutes.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right then, let's talk just a little bit about FanDuel. FanDuel is one-day fantasy football, and you can win yourself real, real money. Go to FanDuel.co.uk. It is only available in the UK at this moment, so apologies for that for anyone outside the UK. But for those of you inside the UK, you can win actual cash. You can also play for free and win money, but if you want to win the big prizes, you got to throw a few quid in your account. The plus side of that, though, is if you sign up with the promo code ARSBLOG, they will refund up to £10 if you don't win in your first game, so you get a second chance to play. This week we are entering the £6,000 fan favourite, top prize there of £600, which is not to be sniffed at. You could buy like fucking hundreds of Star Bars if you wanted. That's what you could do what you want because it's your money. Second prize, £400, then £300, £200, £150. And the top 366 managers all win money in that game. So sign up for FanDuel at fanduel.co.uk. You can download their apps as well for iOS and for Android. All the details are on there. I've picked the team, which of course is going to do nothing. My team is Mandanda, Jose Font, Delaney and McCauley in defense, De Bruyne, Barkley, Capu and Klukas in midfield, and Alexis Sanchez, Troy Deeney and Lucas Perez up front. So come on, Arsenal, that would be good. You could win me some money. If you want to play, check it out. FanDuel.co.uk. Sign up with the promo code ARSBLOG and they will refund you up to £10 if you don't win on your first game. So we play Chelsea this weekend, and because it's Thursday, because it's actually Wednesday when I'm recording this, I don't have a fucking clue what's happening in terms of team news and who's available and who's not going to be available and everything else. So we can't really look at it from that point of view. But you wonder, of course, if some of the players who played well against Nottingham Forest on Tuesday night will have forced their way into the manager's reckoning. What more can Granit Xhaka do to convince Arsene Wenger that he's ready to start? Not only is he banging them in from 30 yards, he's playing extremely well in midfield, controlling the game. He's worked well with Santi Cazorla before. We saw that against Watford. Those two worked very well together. And of course, the fact that he played very well with Elneny, maybe it's a different proposition when you're playing the Chelsea midfield, but, you know, it looked like it worked. They were simpatico. They fit together very well, those two. But Xhaka is certainly a guy who is really banging down the manager's door to say, look, there's a reason you paid £35 million for me. Play me, please. Just, you know, do you want me to bang one in from 50 yards next week? I'll do that and play fucking 9 out of 10 game. Will you start me then? But of course, Arsene Wenger, being at home, might be a bit more cautious. He's used Coquelin and Cazorla. And, you know, it hasn't been terrible, but I think he feels it works better than most other people feel it works. Against a team like Chelsea, could we be a bit more dynamic in midfield? Could we take a couple of risks? Coquelin could also be a guy to come off the bench, for example, if we want to help shore up the game, if we're ahead. Up front, it feels like it's probably going to be the three that played against Hull with Alexis, Iwobi and Theo Walcott on the right-hand side. But has Lucas Perez done enough to maybe force his way into the manager's reckoning? Would we be better playing a centre-forward that could really trouble the two centre-halves, whereas Alexis is kind of going to drop off, isn't he? They won't go with him and they'll sit deep, and that might be a good way for them to defend against us. Anyway, the manager's got plenty of thinking to do about what kind of team he's going to put out, and, you know, it's a good problem for him to have when players like Xhaka, like Elneny, like Lucas Perez have given him really something to think about. If they're challenging the established order, if we take that 11 that played against Hull as the so-called first 11 at this moment in time, it's good that these guys are giving him something to think about. So we'll wait and see. But look, we are going to be, as I said, James and I, in New York. We're going to be watching the game in the Barleycorn, which is in Park Place, New York. It's downtown a bit, I think, near Wall Street somewhere. You can Google map it. They have this incredible feature now where you can just put in the name of a place and it shows you where it is. It's revolutionary. That's where we're going to be watching the game on Saturday, and on Sunday around lunchtime, I think probably around 1 o'clock, we're going to do the live recording of the Arscast Extra. If you want some more details, check out at ArsenalNYC on Twitter or facebook.com/ArsenalNYC. They have all the details about how and when you come along to that thing. Hopefully we'll be celebrating a very good Arsenal win. That would make for a fantastic mood and a very entertaining podcast, I'm sure. No doubt Diego Costa will do something that will make us crazy mad and get away with some terror and nastiness, but hopefully this is a big game which Arsenal turn up, where we keep this momentum going and we all have something to celebrate. So that's really about it for this week's show. I don't know what else to say. Hopefully we'll be seeing some of you in New York City, in the Barleycorn. I guess we'll be on Twitter as well. If you need any more information, you know where to find us. I'll do my best to answer any questions I can. Data roaming, etc. Data roaming. I looked up how much it cost to turn on data roaming when I'm in the United States, and I would need to win FanDuel, and I would need to win the Euro Millions and the Irish Lottery and the Powerball Lottery and whatever else fucking lottery, and then I'd need to inherit a billion tons of gold just to turn my phone on the data for about 2 minutes. So I'll have to sort something out over there. Maybe get a different SIM card. But look, I'll be on and we'll figure it out. So hopefully see some of you in New York. We will have the Arscast Extra for you as ever. It'll be available for you on Monday. I should point out, I guess, that given the time zones and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the time of the blog might be a bit affected by that. So 5 hours behind, so I'm not going to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning just to give you a blog really early, but I'll do my best. You never know, there might be some late night drunken blogging, who knows. I'm open to everything. It's the city that never sleeps, so maybe I won't sleep either. We'll wait and see, and who knows what crazy stuff will come out of the laptop if that happens. But just to give you a fair warning, the time schedules will be a bit up in the air. So look, that's just about that. Talk to you on the Arscast Extra on Monday, and of course on next week's Arscast, we'll have had Champions League action, I think, next week. Is there? I should look all this stuff up before I start saying goodbye. And that. I think there is Champions League action next week. So another game for David Ospina against FC Basel. Isn't that lovely? So look, we'll have lots to talk about, lots to discuss, and I'll catch you on the next one. Until then, take it easy. Thank you as ever for listening. Bye-bye.
Hello, Harry.
Oh, hello, Telly.
How are you today?
I'm not so good, Telly. My ankle really, really hurts.
Do you know what makes me feel better, Harry, when my ankle or something hurts?
What's that then, Telly?
I like to suck my thumb. Have you ever tried it?
Have I? I love sucking my thumb, but my mum, she's put these mittens on my hands and I can't get out my thumbs, Telly!
They're not mittens, Harry. They're your socks. You've put your socks on your hands again, haven't you, Harry?
Oh, where will I ever learn?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.